The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Just into the newsroom, Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson has been suspended from YouTube.
The Hill reports YouTube removed a video where he discussed hydroxychloroquine, which violated the company's medical misinformation policies. In a response on Twitter, Senator Johnson called it a, quote, suppression of speech.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, what do you make of that from WTMJ TV4 in Milwaukee? I'm going to tell you more in a moment. At first, I just want to say good afternoon and welcome. It's good to be back. I'm Drew, and I'm here for you. That's right. It rhymes, doesn't it? I missed you. I was away, though, and I was praying for you. I hope you know that. I was on a pilgrimage last week, and I left the mic in the hands of Ed Morrissey. And I just want to say thank you to Ed. He always does such a phenomenal job in my absence. He's a brilliant man, both very intelligent and articulate, and just does an exceptional job. So, Ed, thank you. Thank you for taking the reins and handling the show in my absence. But it's always good to be back in the chair. It's great to hang out with you. We've got a lot to get into, a lot to talk about. Maybe some time, maybe a little later, I'll fill you in on some of the encounters that I had, too. But feel free to join me. The number here all day long. 888-914-9149. That's direct access into the show. And, of course, we'll pray the chaplet in about an hour. That'll be live, so it'll be good to do that for you. A lot of news happening. Let's start internationally first, okay? And then we'll come back home here. Benjamin Netanyahu, that's a name I am sure you've been familiar with for a very long time. He's been with a lot of our different administrations. Well, guess what? He has been ousted from his position. He's no longer Prime Minister of Israel, and this comes, of course, after four elections had been called in just the last 2 years in attempts to get him out of office. CNN will tell you a little bit more about the new Prime Minister of Israel.
In Benjamin Netanyahu's last speech as Prime Minister, he spoke obviously mostly in Hebrew, but he had one phrase in English. He said, "We'll be back soon," referring to his government. He lashed out at his rivals after listing his accomplishments. After more than 12 years in office and 3 years before that, he called the government that's replacing him a weak government, a dangerous government for Israel, and then said only he could stand up to the Biden administration when it comes to building in the settlements, when it comes to pushing back against a nuclear agreement with Iran. Then it was Naftali Bennett, sworn in as Israel's new prime minister. He once worked for Netanyahu. He has now replaced him, promising a very different kind of politics, one of unity, one of agreement. He now leads the most diverse coalition in Israel's history, and he said he'll work to make that a government that works together to advance the interests of everyone in the country.
Two times in our history, we lost our Jewish home exactly because leaders of the previous generation refused to sit with one another. I am proud to sit with people with different opinions. At the decisive moment, we took responsibility. We took responsibility.
We'll see what happens in the days ahead. Netanyahu, of course, who, as you heard, been there, what, 12, 15 years now, has been charged with several allegations of corruption, including taking bribes and a quid pro quo agreement with an Israeli businessman over a news website, and the businessman apparently had owned it, but they claim he made about $500 million. That's a lot of money. Legal proceedings taking a long time. The trial date's not been established yet. But even if he's found not guilty, the appeal is going to take for years. So his successor, the one you just heard, is a former defense minister, a conservative who's going to be leading a very loose and very fragile coalition of eight political parties out of the dozens that make up the Israeli parliament. We'll keep our eyes on it. They're one of our strongest allies, of course, in the Middle East. And I'm hoping that this will be good for the U.S. But we'll see. I've always appreciated Netanyahu. Hey, leaders of the world's seven wealthiest nations also got together. You know, those seven wealthy nations are known as the G7. And they met over the weekend in Cornwall, England. And the environment was top of their list, right? It was high on the priority list. And the British Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, he says they want to drive this, they want to drive a global industrial revolution to transform the way we live, right? And the leaders all committed to cutting their emissions in half by the year 2030 from the levels that we were at 2010. And they also agreed to end taxpayer support for the use of fossil fuels in poor countries, especially coal. But that means that those countries may be left without any electricity, any means of electricity. For an economic look on the G7 summit, listen to what CNBC was reporting. They make the case that the actual event, you know, really won't have much of a ripple effect. Listen to this.
Well, I mean, I think, to be honest, the G7 is saying what's already been said. I mean, there wasn't anything particularly new. It was just said in a different format, you know, by the seaside this time rather than in various capitals around the world. So I'm not sure that there's a dramatic shift. And there is, of course, a difference in the language. I think US President Biden was being far more aggressive in the approach towards China than, say, we were hearing from Macron or from the European leaders. So there is, you know, beneath the surface, clearly still some kind of division. With regards to the medium-term economic outlook, I mean, I think, to be honest, the approach of the G7, that kind of thing, isn't going to make much of a difference. We've got bigger forces at work in the global economy, shifting supply chains, localization, what we're seeing already start to emerge in the aftermath of the pandemic as the fourth industrial revolution really takes hold. Those things are going to be shaping global trade, which I think over time is going to diminish in importance. We're going to be seeing shifting taxation structures already. That was already agreed by the finance ministers, not by the heads of government, of course. So we're already moving towards a new way of doing things. The G7 may be, you know, on the sidelines waving pom-poms and cheering it on, but we're already seeing these economic shifts come through.
I thought that was a pretty good insight. We'll see what the years ahead unfold. We'll see whether we make those emission cuts and how the rest of the world will follow. But there have been some recent indications by some of the medical establishment that the drug hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin could actually help in early treatment of COVID-19. And I know you probably have been following this story. At least I hope you have. I've had physicians on the air talking about HCQ and ivermectin. And this has become news just recently. Apparently the message hasn't gone through to YouTube, which recently pulled down a couple of videos that the Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin had posted. He held hearings about the effectiveness of those drugs, right? I mean, aren't we all about truth? Don't we all just want the truth when it comes to COVID? What works? When should you have early treatment? What doesn't work? Right? It's about saving lives. It's about proper treatment. It's about truth fundamentally, right? So Senator Johnson of Wisconsin, you know, he posted a couple of videos. They were taken down, and he was holding hearings, by the way, on the effectiveness of these drugs, right? And he took a look at not just the Trump administration, but the Biden administration as well, and he kind of lambasted both of them for not doing enough from what he called robust research. They should have been doing more research on these drugs because apparently they're having a pretty positive effect, and I have a friend who's a physician who was telling me about the use of these. I have a colleague that was taking HCQ all through the pandemic. You know, never once got it. And he was around several people, low doses of it. But YouTube didn't like these videos that he put up because they have a policy right now that says they're not going to tolerate anything that goes against the current world view, right? Anything that goes against the current World Health Organization guidelines. And HCQ and ivermectin aren't in those guidelines. So in addition to removing the videos, YouTube also suspended the senator. This is a senator of the United States of America. So they pulled his videos. They suspended him for a week. And what Senator Johnson said was that YouTube and their ongoing COVID censorship, he made the case that they, look, it proves they have accumulated too much unaccounted power. So he spoke out against this on Fox News, and here's what he had to say.
This is dangerous when you have censorship of information. You know, Louis Brandeis, a Supreme Court justice in a decision almost 100 years ago in 1927 that actually dealt with falsehoods and fallacies that might cause societal harm said the remedy to be applied is more speech, not enforced silence. That was pretty wise back then, but we're moving in the exact opposite direction now.
So we'll see what happens. You know, what is the alternative? I don't know what the answer to YouTube, the alternative to Google, to Facebook, to these giants that are out there right now, Twitter. I know a lot of people are trying to start alternatives. And look, all things rise and fall. Roman Empire rose and fell. You know, I'm sure Facebook and Twitter and all these other ones eventually will too. It might be accelerating or exacerbating their own demise by some of these policies, but we'll see. I've been following a trend going on, and I don't know whether you live in a red or a blue state, but if you live in one of those, listen to this. You know, the pandemic right now, as we know, is receding, right? So people are getting out again. Feels good to get back to life, doesn't it? There's no masks. You know, it's been pretty positive. And people are, you know, they're beginning to fill restaurants and go to the stores and, you know, do all the things they used to do. If the past is a predictor of the future, it looks like the so-called blue states are going to see more people leaving their states and heading for so-called red states. And let me tell you why. I don't know where you are on all this. Have you considered leaving your current state? Maybe because of the COVID politics, maybe because of politics in general, maybe because of economic policy. If so, you're not alone. There's a couple states in our union that a lot of people are heading to. Let me just share with you right now what a woman named Corey said to an Idaho spokesman about why she left the state of California.
And this past couple years, things started to get crazy there. We started to feel unwelcome in our thoughts and to be unable to talk to people about how we felt about things without being bullied or shut down. It started right after Election Day in 2016. I remember simply doing a post that I was happy and grabbing donuts for our office, and people jumped on me. How dare we be so happy? I was unfriended by several people. And then fast forward a couple years later, when President Trump was the first U.S. president to recognize World Down Syndrome Day, which I was very happy with, I did a post on Facebook thanking him for recognizing the value in the lives of our children. And again, I was jumped on quite badly. I ended up having to unfriend several people on Facebook. There were neighbors we couldn't talk to anymore. At work, I had to be quiet about how I felt and how I thought about things. And so my husband and I came up to Idaho to visit his aunt and took one look around and decided it wasn't a matter of if, it was a matter of when. And so we started the process of applying for jobs, and I got my dream job in March, and we decided to come up and move our family up here. And it was the best decision we've ever made.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I know a lot of people who are doing the same thing. They're heading to a lot of other states. I don't know whether it's how many hundreds of people are leaving a day or a week, how it all breaks down, but they're leaving states like New York and New Jersey for Florida. That's one of the states people are heading to. I think it's a day, 900 people a day are leaving states like New York and New Jersey for southern states, Florida. And Texas is another big state down there. But you know the reason? Take a look at the Empire State and the Garden State, right? They call it tax hell. That's what they call those two states. They're doing it for taxes, the reason, right? And the Florida chief financial officer, a guy named Jim Petronis, and he was on Neil Confuto, and he says that people who've retired, they're moving there because there's no income tax, right? And that means that those states that they're exiting are losing billions of dollars in revenue as people leave. That's a lot of people. And they're not alone. In 2019, Illinois lost $6 billion in revenue as more than 80,000 people left the state, right? And U-Haul apparently is a pretty big company there. So that's what Jake says. It's a funny joke.
You know, no, U-Haul's benefiting the most here. So,
well, you know, it's true. Let me share a quick story with you, Jake, and then we'll go to Dr. Bussler coming up here in a second. My wife and I went back east, and heard Ann had passed away. And Kathy wanted her piano. It was a childhood piano. I'm like, why are you taking this piano? This is ridiculous. People give them away. I mean, you want to rent a U-Haul, have movers, put it in there. Then we have to rent movers to take it out. We got to drive it halfway across. But it's so sentimental. I need to remember this when I was a kid. I used to. And I'm like, oh, all right. I want to be a good husband. I decide to let her have, you know, the piano, right? That's the last thing I wanted, you know? And we go down, and look, they live in the tri-state area. Delaware, you know, is surrounded by Philadelphia. You got New Jersey there, right, where they're located. And so we go down, and we visit family. We go to this event and call U-Haul. And I must have called 50 places, and I'm not kidding. Nobody had any U-Hauls. And I thought, that's just weird. Why wouldn't they have any U-Hauls?
Wow.
So then I expanded the search out, okay? You go to Philadelphia, you go to Wilmington, Delaware, you go to, I went all the way to Oxford, Pennsylvania, right? That's like an hour away, practically in the country. And then the rates for the one they had in Oxford jumped. They didn't even have one, the one that we could get the stuff that we wanted into. And I think it's because so many people are moving. I mean, they wanted to send me somewhere way down in New Jersey, like an hour and a half away to pick up a trailer. I'm like, I'm not going to drive 3 hours to go and get this.
Well, like I said, they're all in Illinois. They're too busy out there.
But it's true. I think there's such high demand. Interest rates are so low today with mortgages. People are moving, right? And then I think U-Haul's in demand. The time we were there, too, was around college, when college was letting out universities.
Oh, well, that makes sense, too, yeah.
So, but, you know, 5 days I tried to get one. I literally could not get one. So, it was really, really weird. But a lot of people are leaving, you know, and they're heading out of these states. And maybe it's, you know, I don't know. Maybe it's taxes for you. Maybe it's the politics. California saw about 135,000 more people leave the state than move in. They lost about $12 billion in revenues. Arizona and Texas are the prime destinations for these California expatriates, if you will. And also safety, too. You know, you take a look at some of these places. Minnesota, I have a friend in Minnesota who's actually leaving for Texas. Concern of violence in that city after it burned. So lots of reasons. Pretty big shifts going on, though, right now in the country. And California's trying to make up for that. There's a bill that they just introduced that would require people who move from the Golden State, check this out. If you are in California, turn up the radio. You're going to have to keep paying taxes to the state for 5 more years. Say, what? Right? That, of course, is unconstitutional, but it shows how desperate that state is for that lost revenue. You know, it's about policy. That's what it is for me. It comes down to policy and politics. People are kind of fed up with it. I'm joined right now by a public policy analyst and a professor of finance at Stockton University in Galloway, New Jersey. And it's great to have with me Dr. Michael Bussler. Doctor, welcome. Thank you for your time today.
Well, thanks for having me. It's my pleasure to be here.
This is, I think there's a lot of reasons to motivate people to leave. Yeah. But just how different are tax situations in some of these states? I mean, California, New York, New Jersey, you see people leaving them in droves right now. Is it the economics that's a prime factor?
It's one of the prime factors, or actually a couple of them. So let me just summarize a little bit about what you said. So there are 5 states where people are leaving: California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. Yep. California, for their first time in history, had a decline in their population last year.
Wow.
And that was the first time in history that's happened. So why is everybody leaving? Where are they going? They're mostly gone, as you mentioned, to Florida, Texas, Arizona. Why are they doing that? Well, a couple of reasons. One, particularly for people that are high achievers and have fairly high income, the maximum federal income tax rate is 37% now, and the Biden administration wants to raise that up to 40%. In addition to that, California has a state income tax that could be as high as 13%.
Wow.
So on your marginal income, 37% to the federal government, 13% to California,
wow,
that's half of your income going to taxes. A similar problem occurs in New Jersey, where the top state income tax rate is about 12%. Now, New Jersey also has the highest property taxes in the country, and they have a 8% sales tax on top of that. So people look around, they say, look, I have my family here. I live at the Jersey Shore. I love where I live, but right, it's getting very expensive to be here. So people are saying, you know, if I move down to Florida or Texas, I just gave myself a $10,000 or $15,000 a year raise. And there's because of the virus, when a lot of companies sent their employees home to work remotely, they found that their productivity actually went up.
Wow.
When people were working at home. They didn't have to commute. They didn't have to get dressed up. So I think now that the virus is, we're getting it under control, I think a lot of companies are going to continue to say to many employees, you can work remotely. Well, if you can work remotely, there's no sense to live in a state where you're going to pay over half of your income to taxes, and that will encourage even more of this. The states are about to make a big mistake, too. They believe that if they're short of revenue, all they have to do is raise the tax rate. But the problem is, if you raise the rate and more people leave, you'll actually bring in less money,
wow,
than if you kept the rate lower and had more people there. So economics, I think, is the primary reason why people are leaving. Secondly, and you mentioned this,
sure,
there's less freedom in those states. Those states tend to have more control over the population of more things they can and can't do. Florida, Texas, Arizona, a little more freedom in those states. And lastly, each of those states that I mentioned, California, Illinois, New York, they all have big cities. And the crime rate in the big cities is soaring because people feel we have to defund the police. We made the police into bad guys. So now crime is up ridiculously large amounts in these cities. And people are saying, well, now I live in a city that has high crime. I'm paying high taxes and they're telling me what to do. Well, I like where I'm living, but I don't like it that much. And people are leaving to states that are more friendly.
And people are also, I think, leaving for political reasons, too. I mean, people who who live in those red states are very concerned also about people from the blue states trying to influence their new state governments towards the same policies that they left behind that caused these type of problems. I don't blame them. Is there any evidence of that happening? I mean, we see certain states kind of turning purple now.
Look at Texas. So a lot of the startup companies and the software companies that were in California moved to Austin, Texas, and took a lot of people from California with them. Unfortunately, for the people in Texas, the ones that have moved in still maintain their very blue state views, and they turn the city of Austin, for instance, into a very liberal city in the midst of a very conservative state. So I hear a lot of people in Texas saying, look, we welcome everybody. We welcome everybody. Just don't bring your liberal ideas when you come. Leave those in the state where you had the problem. Come prosper here under and live under our freedom and our low taxes, but keep a less liberal view.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Professor, I would love to have you back where we can talk much more about this. I appreciate your perspective and your influence on this. How do you see this shaking out in the end? What do you think is going to happen? The trend is going to continue, or eventually it'll slow down?
Well, the trend will continue, I think, at least in the short run, the next few years. Then these governors of the states that are losing population are going to have to say, look, we can't keep doing this because we're losing too much population, so we're going to have to change our ways. And what that will mean is they're going to have to lower the tax rates. They're going to have to reduce all the government spending that the state has. In California, it's practically a sanctuary state. Anybody from anywhere in the world can walk in there and get free health care and support from the state. The state's going to have to realize that they can't keep doing that, or their population will continue to decline. That will put severe strains on their budgets, and they're going to have to realize that different policies are needed in order to keep their population there and happy.
Yeah, well, Professor, thank you. We'll talk again soon. I really appreciate your time. That's Dr. Michael Bussler. You can check him out online. Stay with me when we come back. I've got to change gears slightly. We'll take a look at the Arizona audit. There's a hand recount that's expected soon. We'll see where that is and what they might ultimately find. Stay with me. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Looking live at the Senate Republican audit, which is continuing, the next phase in Arizona's partisan election audit is the hunt for alleged tampering with ballots.
A spokesman for the Senate Republican says the hand recount of 2.1 million Maricopa County ballots should end this week.
Connect with Drew. Relevant Radio.
At 888-914-9149.
Yeah, that was 12 News in Phoenix that had that report. I don't know if you're surprised to hear that the recount is still going on. It might be news for some people. I was out of the country last week, and I saw a story that, you know, Arizona's taking a look at some of their ballots, and I'm thinking, what? Do you remember? I remember watching the elections that night. I remember, you know, as states were turning, you know, blue and red, Arizona, Fox had called it early. And boy, a lot of people were upset that Fox called the state of Arizona for Joe Biden. You know, even before the liberal networks had crunched all their numbers, they were one of the first to go ahead and to to do that. I know after that, a lot of people dropped Fox. They weren't going to watch anymore. They dropped Fox Nation. They did things along those lines, and they think that might have had an influence on how other people went out and voted, because around the country, people were still going to ballot boxes. That was just one side note. But, you know, there's a lot of controversy over what happened in states like Pennsylvania and other places around the country over potential, you know, fraud. You know, last year's election's over, of course, right? In some ways, it is still going on. Maricopa County, Arizona, they're undergoing a full audit of their 2.1 million ballots that were cast in the state's largest county and city. 2.1 million ballots. The audit was called for by members of the state Senate because they claimed that there were these voting irregularities, is the way they put it. Perhaps enough to swing the election towards Donald Trump. So President Biden, of course, he won the county by, they say, over 45,000 votes, a little more than a 2% margin. The audit is being done by a private group. It's called Cyber Ninjas, and it's being heavily criticized right now by Democrats and the mainstream media. I don't know if you're familiar with what's unfolding, but let me share a little bit more from 12 News in Phoenix about what's next for this recount process. Listen to this.
These empty tables at Veterans Memorial Coliseum will soon be filled with people examining hundreds of thousands of Maricopa County ballots. So what are they looking for?
Characteristics about the ballot that confirm or question their authenticity.
Are they things that an election security expert, an election administrator would be looking for in an audit?
No, not at all.
Ryan Macias is an audit observer for Secretary of State Katie Hobbs. He says the ballot examination is plagued by a lack of transparency.
The process is in constant flux. And it's changing on a daily basis or a weekly basis.
Senate Republican audit liaison Ken Bennett told reporters Tuesday that ballots would be examined for whether they were photocopied, whether the printing is consistent, whether they were folded the right way, and more.
No, an election official is going to know why it was folded or unfolded.
Macias said he just got these new instructions for ballot examiners. They're supposed to flag ballots that feel lighter or heavier, or textured differently than ballot paper, and any other unidentified anomalies. Audit spokesman did not respond to requests for comment. Bennett says the ballot exam should last through the end of June.
So we'll see what comes out from it, and it raises a lot of questions. But look, Arizona's not the only state. Other states are looking at similar actions. The state of Wisconsin, where the Speaker of the Assembly is, they hired three retired police officers. They're going to spend the next 3 months looking at whether or not there were widespread issues, including double voting. Fulton County in Georgia, they're doing an audit of nearly 150,000 votes. Two Michigan counties are looking at audits as well. Even San Luis Obispo County in California, they've seen residents there ask for audits. So look, I want the truth, don't you? Right. All of this comes as a number of states have passed, or they're now looking at passing new laws on voting. Some of which have gotten those states into trouble with business community. Right. Georgia is one of those classic cases. Right. They've been hard hit after they passed a law with Major League Baseball, then moving the All-Star game from Atlanta to Denver, even though Colorado has a voter ID law, just like what Georgia passed. It was so insane. Florida's governor, Ron DeSantis, he passed a similar law, basically daring companies to do anything to the Sunshine State. So, but critics say, look, the audits are going to cause questions in people's minds about how valid the next elections are. And others say that it's necessary because the questions about the elections were never fully answered between the election and the inauguration. A lot of questions to take a look at. You know, what can audits find? How useful are they? Is it going to change anything? You know, I see articles out there that Donald Trump thinks he's still going to be president. Is it possible? What if we found that there was massive fraud in certain states? What would happen in a situation like that? Here to help us answer some of those questions, and you can join me too, is Hans von Spakovsky. He's a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation and a former member of the Federal Election Commission. And he authored a book, I've talked about this many times, called Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. It's always good to have him back. Hey, Hans, good afternoon. Thank you for being here.
Drew, thanks for having me. And by the way, can I mention that we're actually, John Fund and I, doing an update to that book. It's supposed to be out in the fall called Our Broken Elections, How the Left change the way you vote, and a lot of it will deal with last year's election.
So, that's fantastic. When's that hit the press? Is it already out?
No, it's gonna. It's in the process right now of being edited and stuff. Should be out early in the fall.
Well, it's important, and I'll tell you what, it'll be big too as we get to midterms, and then of course the general elections before we know it. Look, people want to trust the process, right? We want to trust the process. Let's talk Arizona first. Your take on that Arizona audit. The mainstream media has been mocking it ever since it was proposed. You know, as the process has gone on. I mean, is there a valid process? What do you know about it? Maybe you could explain it to those who are not following the story.
I'm just amazed at the criticism of it. The criticism has been coming in from the media, from Democrats, and even Merrick Garland, the attorney general under Biden, criticized it in a speech last week, making the strange claim that it would undermine public confidence in our democracy and put the integrity of the voting process at risk. In fact, the exact opposite is true. People have questions about the election, and an audit hopefully will answer those questions. And let me give you an example of what I mean. Windham, New Hampshire, a small town, they recently did an audit. And guess what they found? They found that the voting machines that scan and count absentee ballots were miscounting the ballots.
Wow.
And it didn't change the outcome of the election, but the winning candidates in a town council race were not credited with, I think, almost 300 votes they should have gotten. And the losing candidate, who they thought had lost by about two dozen votes, actually lost by 100 votes. Now, the whole point of doing an audit like that is if they hadn't done it, election officials would have no idea that their voting equipment mm-hmm. was misreading the ballots. Now they know it, and now they can fix it so it won't happen in future elections. And that's what they're trying to do in Arizona. Look, it's not going to change who's president. That's not going to change the outcome of the presidential election. But an audit will tell us if anything occurred or if the election was perfectly above board.
So a couple things here. One, do you think there was, you know, some errors in those machines? I don't know how grave they are. I mean, you take a look at a massive scale, the, you know, 80 million votes for Joe Biden, 70 some for Trump or whatever. I mean, they can add up pretty quick if you have that many people voting, and especially if there is an anomaly, a quirk in the software, or maybe there's some nefarious. Do you think there was some hacking or some voter fraud at work? What are your thoughts on this? You've written books on this. You know, people think, hey, you know, really, voter fraud? How's that going to be perpetrated? Is it a possibility, and what do you think it went down?
Look, I don't know what went down, but it could be either or. Again, going back to the Windham, New Hampshire audit, they've concluded that there was nothing intentional there. It was just the equipment was misreading the absentee ballots. But, for example, you know, one of the things they're talking about that they're going to be doing in the Arizona audit is checking the absentee ballot as they go through them by hand to see if they were folded or not. People may think, well, why would you do that? Well, because when a voter fills out an absentee ballot, they have to fold it to put it into the envelope. So if you find a huge stack of absentee ballots that were never folded, well, that raises a red flag. Where did those come from? Did a voter obviously didn't mail them in? And you then have to look at them and try to figure out, where did they come from? Are those fraudulent ballots? That's the kind of thing that an audit can reveal.
So, you know, let me ask you a question about this. I mean, President Biden is the president now. Congress has certified the votes. But let's say Arizona, they find that, yeah, there was some sort of, you know, hacking into the system, or Philadelphia or Georgia or any, you know, whatever state, right? And let's say overwhelmingly, President Trump won the election. They find that out now in June of 2021. It's too late, right? I mean, there's nothing that could be done. Even if the election was stolen, Joe Biden would remain president, correct?
That's exactly right. There's nothing to be done about it. Look, it's just like, here's a piece of news that the media didn't report widely because they don't like reporting election fraud. Look, last year in Philadelphia in May, a Philadelphia election judge pleaded guilty to accepting bribes to stuff fraudulent ballot box into a voting machine in Philadelphia in multiple elections for multiple candidates. Apparently, he manufactured literally hundreds of fraudulent ballots. He was prosecuted, but did that change the results of any of the prior elections? No, because it was too late to do that.
Wow, fascinating. Absolutely fascinating. So with these audits, I mean, as you pointed out, they can be useful. One of the issues that people have right now is that the policies and procedures for doing the audit aren't publicly available. Is that a legitimate concern or not? Not so. I mean, what are your thoughts on how this is being executed?
Well, I think once they report on the results, they're going to have to then be completely transparent and report on all of the procedures and things they use, because otherwise people aren't going to trust the outcome of it. It might be nice if they were transparent about it now, but on the other hand, they've been undergoing unbelievable criticism.
Yeah.
And they probably would get more of it no matter what they said, and particularly because, again, the U.S. Justice Department, Merrick Garland, last Thursday in a speech, threatened to sue them over the audit, complaining that it violated federal voting rights laws. That is absolutely untrue. Conducting a post-election audit does not violate the Voting Rights Act or any other federal voting law. But the fact that the Biden administration would try to scare Arizona off from doing it by making this bizarre claim, oh, you're violating federal law, tells you how much the left doesn't want these audits to go forward.
It's such a shame that we live in a time
that
we even have to go through this in the United States of America, of all places. It's so frustrating to me. Well, stay with me, Hans. I take a short pause. When we come back, we'll take a few more we'll take a few calls for you, too. If you want to get in, I have Hans von Spakovsky with me today for a few more minutes. So we're taking a look at election audits, election laws, voter fraud. And if you want to get in, the number here is 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Jim in Chicago, he thinks anyone in their right mind would be insane to cast an illegal ballot. I don't know. There's been a lot of cases where illegal ballots have been cast. We'll take a look at that, though, and more. Stay with me.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. It's good to be back. If you are just tuning in, we'll pray the chaplet in about 15 minutes. I'm joined by Hans von Spakovsky, and he's the author of a book you might want to read, Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. If you wonder about voter fraud or manipulation, it's a good read. He's, of course, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and he worked with the FEC for quite a while. He was a former member of that. And I'm just taking a look right now at what's going on in Arizona and election audits and election laws. There's a lot happening on Capitol Hill, too. We'll get into it. But let's jump into the phones. Take a few of your calls if you want to get in. And Hans, Jim in Chicago has been waiting for a while to share his view with you. Jim, good afternoon.
Hi, John. I just, for the life of me, I didn't know why anybody would risk their freedom to cast an illegal vote.
Yep.
And you get 1,000 people arrested to jeopardize their freedom to cast an illegal vote is really out of the realm of possibility. Right. I mean, I've never heard of anybody casting an illegal vote my whole life. And I live in Chicago. Everybody has accused Chicago.
Yeah.
But it's legit votes. I mean, you couldn't. Who would risk their freedom to do it? Anyway, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thanks, Jim. I appreciate it. Hans, let's pick up on that point, because I know we've talked about what happened in Philadelphia, a lot of other places. But go ahead. Why don't you bring some clarity to it?
Well, look, I wouldn't. I would certainly not commit election fraud for that reason. But if people acted solely on the basis of rationality, our prisons would be empty.
Yeah.
Okay. And look, sometimes it's just one person who decides to take advantage of the system, like the guy we just added. We maintain an election fraud database at the Heritage Foundation of proven cases. And look, we just added a student, a college student, to the list who was convicted in New Hampshire of registering to vote in Massachusetts, where he lives, but he's also going to the University of New Hampshire, and he registered to vote there too, and he voted in both states in the same election at the same time, which is highly illegal. Now, wow. That was really foolish for a college student to do that. We've got other cases where people engaged in a conspiracy to cast many fraudulent ballots in order to win elections. And look, I wouldn't do it, but people do it, yeah. And sometimes they get caught and prosecuted.
You know, there are some who claim that they have evidence of people putting in ballots over and over again, scanning them multiple times. We talked about Philadelphia in the past, you know, how more people voted that were in the county or whatever it might have been. I mean, you have lots of these types of cases, right? So it's not unusual that this has been done in the past and that there are people who would like to try to do it again in the future.
No, that's right. And but particularly because this caller is from Chicago.
Yep.
Listen, in the mid-1980s, The U.S. Justice Department prosecuted its largest voter fraud case in its history. They convicted over 60 people for engaging in fraud in precincts all over the city. And I interviewed the FBI agent who was in charge of the investigation. He estimated that there were literally tens of thousands
wow.
of fraudulent ballots cast by this very organized machine in the election in Chicago.
Wow. Wow. All right, let's jump back to the phones. Lakeville, Minnesota is next. Lynn is joining us there. Lynn, hi, you're on the air with Hans von Spakovsky.
Hello.
Hi, Lynn. Go right ahead.
Oh, okay. My question was, Drew had asked you, if the results come back and show that really Trump did win the election and there was fraud, mm-hmm. you answered the question that nothing could be done about it. I guess I was just wondering why you said that and what stands behind that answer.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Well, the reason is that in order to contest an election outcome, which you have to do at a state level, in other words, if a losing candidate in Arizona, for example, wants to contest the election, state laws have very short time limits to file a lawsuit to contest the election. And we are way past those deadlines. It's simply too late to contest it. Now, that doesn't mean that if rather than a mistake, someone actually committed fraud, it's not too late for that individual to be investigated and potentially criminally prosecuted. But it is too late to contest the outcome of the election just because of statutorily imposed deadlines.
Yeah, I was so amazed at this past election. I mean, I can't believe we're talking about the vote that took place in November, but lots going on in the country. You're just joining us. We're taking a look at the Arizona recount and a lot of other states now looking at it. You know, if you took a look at the optics of this last election, you know, the Biden administration, they campaigned the president at the time, President-elect Biden, you know, he was in his basement most of the time. People would come out, 100 cars would show up for a rally. And then you got the optics of the Trump administration, where there are thousands of people standing in line all day to attend rallies or having regattas and, you know, carpools and all this different type of stuff. And to think that 80 million went for Biden, something in that area, 70-some for Trump. What did you make of the turnout for this type of thing? I just love your assessment of the way that election all went down, because I thought that the voting, especially with COVID, would have been fewer rather than more. And clearly, Donald Trump was a polarizing character, and COVID was a big issue in all this, but that's an awful lot of votes.
Well, it is, but in fact, the Census Bureau just recently released their report on turnout in last year's mm-hmm. election. And it was the highest turnout in a presidential election in this century. And in fact, it was higher turnout than when Barack Obama got reelected in 2012. People, despite COVID,
wow.
people were really interested in this election, and they got out and they voted.
Wow. John in Port St. Lucie, Florida, thanks for joining us. You're on the air.
Hi. Yes. Good morning, gentlemen. Good afternoon. Hans, it's a pleasure. I mean, I've been following you for years. You are an American hero. One thing I want to point out, though, is how difficult it is to prove voter fraud. Unless, yes. When you say an audit, the only true way to do an audit is to go through the voter rolls. Now, what yes. I'm trying to say is a lot of people don't understand how the process works with absentee ballot. You sign the outside of the envelope. Once that signature hopefully has been verified, which we know did not take place in the last election because a lot of states did not have the capability, like the state of Florida, which is used to doing it, because one-third right. usually sent it in absentee ballot because we have an elderly population. But that's all registered people. We know in advance who these people are. So once you open up that envelope and you separate the ballot from the envelope, there is no way to prove the fraud. The fraud can only be proved before you open up the envelope and establish that this person is an American citizen and this person is a legitimate registered voter. And a lot of people don't understand how absentee ballots work. Two things real quick that stand out. 80 million? Give me a break. No president has ever gotten 70 million.
Wow.
And For Biden to blow away Barack Obama's 65 million the first time he ran,
yeah.
and then Trump. The other point is Trump, first president in the history to go for reelection and get more votes in his reelection than any other president. I mean, most of the time, a president going for reelection gets less votes, just like Barack Obama right. got less votes. Those are two anomalies that just are blaring.
All right. John, thanks. I love your perspective, Hans.
Yeah. No. Look, he points out very real problems with audits if they're not done the right way. And there's two things about this. One, you know, he's right. Once the ballot affidavit is separated from the actual vote, you can't recall the vote. On the other hand, if you still have those affidavits that have the name of the voter on them and the signature,
right.
well, then, yeah, you could do an audit in which you actually go back and do what should have been done, which is comparing the information, the signature on that affidavit with the voter registration list. If you find it's fraudulent, it's too late to dig that ballot out of the anonymous ballot box, but you would know that fraud had occurred. Look, the other problem, and he mentioned it, was the voter registration list. Look, if all you do is recount the ballot, that's not a complete audit,
right?
Because the other thing you ought to be checking is, okay, were all the registered voters, are they real people? Do they actually live in the state, or do they live elsewhere? Unless you're checking that kind of information, you're not going to know whether, for example, people voted in your state, even though they are illegally registered, not only in your state, but another state, and they voted in both states.
Hey, John, thank you. Let me move along just for the sake of time here. Mary's in Minnesota. Mary, good afternoon.
Hi, I have a question for your guest. Poll watchers did not work out too good last time. So at every desk where somebody is slitting open the envelope, why don't they have a Republican on one side and a Democrat on the other? Have three people in a row. And when that person that opens the envelope gets up and goes somewhere, follow them.
Okay, Mary, thank you. Let's talk about safeguarding the vote and the count. Should there be some, what are your thoughts on some new safeguards or protocols being put into place?
Well, look, she's exactly right. There should be poll watchers watching every aspect of the election process, including the opening of absentee ballots. And in fact, one of the recommendations that we've made at the Heritage Foundation, where I work, is we've recommended that states all over the country amend their poll watcher laws to punish election officials who put poll watchers so far back that they can't see what's right. going on. Because, Drew, remember, yep. that happened a lot in the last election, places like Philadelphia and yep. Detroit. That should not be happening. There should be complete transparency in the election process.
They boarded up the windows. Where was that? Was that Philadelphia?
That was Detroit, I think.
Detroit, yeah.
I think it was Detroit.
Yeah, it's like, okay, you can't look in. We're gonna. That screams to me that, hey, something not right is going down. A lot going on. HR 1 and HR 2. We only have a couple minutes left, but you want to bring everybody up to speed on what's happening on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, H.R. 1 is this very bad bill. It would federalize the election process. It would do things like ban state voter ID laws. It passed the House. It's stuck in the U.S. Senate. Joe Manchin of West Virginia says he's not willing to get rid of the filibuster rule. Stopping the bill depends on the filibuster rule staying in place so the Republicans can stop it. But boy, being dependent on just one vote like that, that's not good. It's dangerous.
No, you're not kidding. That's H.R. 1?
That's H.R. 1.
And what's H.R. 4?
H.R. 4 is another voting bill. It's like the backup plan. And it would give the U.S. Justice Department the ability to basically veto changes made by every state in the country to their voting laws on things like voter ID, the cleanup of voter rolls, et cetera. It's also a very bad bill.
Okay. Well, we'll have you back. Talk a little bit more about those as well. But thank you, Hans, for your time. It's always a joy to have you here. It's always enlightening for sure. I look forward to the next time we can talk.
Yep, great. Thanks a lot for having me.
That's Hans von Spakovsky, senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation, author of a book called Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. And you might want to check that out. They're coming out with an updated version of that. It's been a while since we prayed together. Not that I have not been praying for you, because I did, and I'll tell you where I did that. When we come back, we'll pray the chaplet together. So if you want to get in, I'll give you the number. It's 888-914-9149. I'd love to pray with you. So stay with me. More straight ahead.